Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin?
Good afternoon, Kate. We are in the inconsistent days of late spring.
Inconsistent, that's a big word for
spring. Well, yesterday and today were amazing. Next week is kind of rubbish again. So, yeah. May, what do they say? April? Oh, I don't know. There's some phrase. I don't know what it is. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about tech news.
Yes.
We bring two topics today. One is kind of a topic we're both bringing, and one is a topic you're bringing.
Yeah.
What's your topic going to be?
I want to talk about Italy and the Italian startup scene.
Okay. And we are going to talk about Opera Days, which we were at a couple of weeks ago.
Correct.
If anyone wonders, Opera the browser, they are technically Norwegian, but we will dig into that a little bit more in a moment. But before we do, SetApp is a Mac subscription service where for $9.99 a month, dollars, unfortunately, you can use a bunch of Mac and some iOS apps for free. And the creators actually get paid out of that, which is kind of cool. We're both pretty big users of it. What are some of your favorite apps on SetApp, Kate?
MoneyWiz,
yep.
Or managing my money. Clean my Mac.
Clean my Mac.
Because
cleaning your Mac.
It's all kinds of gremlins that happen in my Mac.
There's definitely a lot of gremlins in your Mac, yes.
So, all that jazz. So, yeah, good stuff, basically.
And I'm also using MoneyWiz, Clean My Mac. NotePlan I'm using quite a lot at the moment. I'm a big fan of MindNode. I use a lot of them, to be honest with you. Better Touch tool. Oh, that's a real Mac power users tool made in Germany. So some amazing stuff. Also, we've actually visited their offices in Kyiv and in Boston.
Yes, we
and
did.
Sadly, recently the offices in Kyiv were actually hit by bombs. So I hope everybody there is okay. But yes, if you are interested in signing up and sending the show a few percentage of that fee, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/setapp. I think you can just jump straight in with Italy.
Okay, sure. Yeah, I wanted to talk about Italy. You know, when we think about tech ecosystem, who gets the most coverage, who's the most powerful, there's three people that come up, or three countries. There's Italy. Okay, start again.
Okay.
Yeah, I want to talk about the Italian tech ecosystem. And the reason being that I think traditionally at TechEU, we've always had the most, I guess, outreach, news and sort of, I don't know, investments coming from sort of three big countries, UK, France and Germany. And we're always very, very interested in getting, you know, a feel for places that are perhaps less advanced or less, less evolved in their tech. They may be more frontier tech, for example. Their funding stages might be earlier, things like that. And one country that's really coming up a lot this year, even a little bit last year, is Italy. So basically I sat down with a founder from Italy and also an investor. So Quomodo, which is a fintech, and RTP Global, which is a VC, to kind of get a feel for what's happening in the space. RTP Global invested in Quomodo, so that's where that sort of relationship happened. But it also shows that, you know, they've both got deep domain experience in the space, particularly in Italy. And what a lot of people don't know is Italy is actually home to several unicorns. There's Scalapay, Satispay, iGenius. I don't know a company you know intimately, Bending Spoons.
I'll say intimately, but more unpleasantly.
Critically might be the term.
Yeah.
But, you know, we still contend that, you know, Italy is more early stage, it's more nascent as a startup ecosystem. And the interesting bit is what really drove it and why it's become more prevalent in the last, you know, few years, particularly last year or so, is COVID-19. Italy was really lacking in that kind of digital transformation, tech adoption that we saw in other sectors. And what happened during COVID was that the government intentionally really pushed for investment. So, for example, they created a sovereign fund to promote startups and early stage investment. They committed $1 billion during COVID for, I guess, digitization and innovation. And then they expanded that again to sort of deep tech AI and semiconductors. So it shows that you've got, you know, an example of a sector that's evolving. And it's also kind of, you know, it's still in early stages in some respects. Things like, you know, Italian-trained large language models as an example perhaps. But it's really starting to evolve when it comes to things like quantum and chip manufacturing, which I think is super interesting.
And I mean, technically, Italy has always been a country of entrepreneurs. So that's why would it not carry into the new model of entrepreneurs? You know, basically, it's a country that's had a lot of manufacturing, a lot of industry, a lot of import-export. The Italian diaspora all around the world has also gone and started businesses and made connections and things like that. So it doesn't seem crazy that they would.
It's a good point. I mean, one thing that one impression I've got from people is that two things. Firstly, that a lot of wannabe entrepreneurs or would-be entrepreneurs today, if they'd graduated from a related course at university or what have you, they would have gone and worked for a big company. So they would have made their career there, which would have been like that manufacturing company or import-export or what have you. But we're also seeing a shift where founders that I guess we associate as diaspora, like the founders of King who make Candy Crush, Kong, Free Trade, TrueLayer, they all built their companies abroad. And the hope is kind of that, you know,
we'll
now
take them home.
Yeah, they're bringing that, we call it the flywheel effect. You know, companies found abroad, they make some success, they bring it, they bring the skills back, the entrepreneurship, then they, you know, their team birth their own startups and so forth. So I think that's part of it. I mean, it's a sector that's not beset by the, you know, any unique problems because, for example, everywhere people are struggling to get sort of Series B beyond funding. You know, most VCs, they're focused on early stage pre-seed seed, which is, you know, usually less money basically. But the hope is that, you know, with some intentionality, public and private investment, the sector could catch up with Spain, for example, in the next 8 to 10 years, which is kind of...
So Spain is that big?
Yeah.
I mean, the Spanish economy is apparently doing quite well, which I suppose
is exactly
part of that.
And I thought I might share a couple of interesting startups in the space.
Yeah, go for it.
One of my favorites is probably Oliver, which has developed a drone to support olive harvesting.
So, a bit of a cliche, but yes.
What it basically does is it generates wind and prompts olives to fall from the trees at the right stage of ripeness. Yeah, a wind machine, but not, you know, not like the kind you use in a music video. And the reason they do this is because you have things like there are traditionally what they call mechanical shakers used, which is kind of a glorious visual when you think about it, I guess, for shaking trees and getting olives to fall down.
Shake it like an olive tree.
Exactly. But, you know, these, you know, they usually run on fossil fuels, you know, they – there's labor involved and time and all that sort of thing. And they also are limited to sort of fairly level ground, whereas the Oliver can go in like rocky areas, like high high slopes, steep, you know, mountainous regions, for want of a better word. So I think that's pretty cool. Probably another one I'd mention is UBT, which is Umbria Bioengineering Technologies. And it's developed a MammoWave. It's basically a breast imaging device for early detection of breast cancer. And it basically is making a safer machine because, you know, women have to get these regularly of a certain age, but getting it done is, you know, is risky in itself in some respects. What they do is actually use microwave imaging technology instead of ionizing radiation, so instead of X-rays. So I think that's a super interesting idea.
Okay.
But the other area I would say, you know, to keep it to probably two areas I would actually put forward for Italy that are kind of really growing is the first one would be quantum. There's a lot of those kind of university spin-out quantum companies that are slowly evolving. Mm. I mean, maybe not at the maturation and the speed of some of the other regions like, you know, Norway's and Denmark's, but they're still kind of happening. And the other one would be chip development.
Okay. Really?
There's quite a few. Yeah, there's what quite sort a few of hardware companies.
What sort of chips?
I guess an example would be, let me think. Neuronova, which is a company I interviewed from memory, and they're a Milanese company, and they make a neuromorphic processor, which basically means a processor that mimics, I guess, the intelligence of a brain in simple terms.
I feel like I spoke to them years ago.
Did you?
And they maybe had a different name or something. Yeah.
So it emulates brain functions at a hardware level. And what it means, you know, beyond that, the practicality of why it matters, beyond the big words and the kind of fancy premise, is it makes AI able to form tasks at lower energy consumption. Mm. So they say 1,000 times less than currently.
Yeah.
And all within a very small chip of 3 millimeters by 3 millimeters. So that's quite a thing.
So Italy doesn't have like a particular sector or speciality. It's relatively broad.
I think it has a few. Okay. And quantum and hardware would be probably a couple. Tourism, obviously, would be another one. And
are
also
there
there's
startups in that space though, in tourism? Or?
There's always tourism startups, or travel tech, I think we call it more It's one of those areas where I think you start local and then you scale depending on what you're doing.
Yeah.
And because there's so many different requirements in different countries, you can have the way it looks to me. I mean, I'm not a deep domain expert in travel tech. I don't cover a lot of it.
Mm.
You do seem to have the scope that you can have a bunch of competing products to a certain point.
Yeah. And does the diaspora help in Italy?
I think so.
Like, can they get more access to, you know, New York is traditionally full of lots of Italians, et cetera, et cetera. Like, does this help?
100%.
Okay.
I think this is something that I see particularly in those countries where they are, you know, maybe earlier stage or they're less startups or what have you. They really do build a presence of where those early founders who go to, say, Silicon Valley or New York or Boston, depending on what you're doing, they kind of usher in the new ones. So they introduce them around. They do the warm introductions that are actually beneficial. They're, you know, actually adding value to, you know, making those changes, which I think is all about, you know, we know this is a sector where it runs on, you know, introductions and connections and business dealings and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And if anyone is wondering, because we didn't really explain it, what I have against bending spoons. I mean, firstly, I'm surprised that they're a unicorn. Also, like, I wouldn't necessarily think of them as a startup because as far as I'm aware, all they really do is acquire other companies. So they've acquired Evernote, they've acquired Meetup, and none of these are European companies.
Sure.
They've also acquired StreamYard, and most recently they covered Komoot, which was a German company.
That's
and travel-related, so at least that was European. And I've just, they, as far as I can tell, they have a tendency to acquire companies that aren't doing so well
and middling success.
Yeah, middling success in making them successful. I don't think we could argue that.
Interesting.
Evernote has gone very well recently.
Mm.
Meetup, I don't know, has always struggled. StreamYard, I think, is pretty successful.
I thought StreamYard was pretty solid.
Yeah. Komoot, I don't know. Komoot has a strange business plan. Like, I paid for it. I got it for free through our health insurer. But they still keep prompting me to upgrade. And I was thinking, I've already upgraded. so their model was almost too friendly. You could unlock the world and that's it.
Yeah.
There's no monthly fee or anything. So
how do you generate income from existing existing users? And that's what becomes a problem with this stuff.
Well, this is where Meetup is going. Anyway, we're getting slightly off topic, although technically I suppose they're Italian now, so we could talk about it, Okay. And are there any events or anything like that coming up that if people are interested
actually,
in more?
Italian Tech Week will be on in Turin in, let me check when that is, 1 second, October. So there's a little bit of time if you think you're going. And the interesting thing about it is that Jeff Bezos is headlining Italian Tech Week, which is a great boost for the ecosystem, basically.
wonder if Bezos is an Italian name or not.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But, you know, I think it's overall, I mean, Italy's doing well. It's, you know, 2021, Q1 2025, it's doubled its value in terms of enterprise value. Then within 4 years, it expanded by raising more than $315 million in Q1 2025 and hit an enterprise value of $82 billion. That's not bad. You know, I think it's it shows that traction that, you know, you're getting companies that are able to do that. And it also is obviously driven by private investments like Ventmo, these kind of companies that are launching dedicated funds to supporting Italian founders globally. So it is that diaspora thing, as we mentioned.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby at all. But speaking of events.
Sorry, there was just some foot traffic.
Do you want me to do this bit?
No, because I was talking, so I was just leaving it for a minute.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. Yes, let's take a very short break and we will come back and talk about Opera Days. So yes, a couple of weeks ago, Kate and I were both in Lisbon.
We were.
For Opera Days. Now, Opera, we should probably do a quick explainer just in case, because it's
since we're talking about Italy.
Yeah, actually I realize not planned this way, but Opera is a browser. It's existed for 30 years. They're actually going to celebrate their 30th anniversary later this year. They are Norwegian, but I think you have a little bit more insight into that.
Mm. I do.
Yep.
Do you want me to share that now?
Would be good.
Okay. Let's see. Let me open my article. Here we go. Yeah, the company is basically owned by Opera Limited, like the browser, which is a publicly traded company on the NASDAQ. However, the majority owner and control is a Chinese company called Kulintech.
Okay. But it doesn't seem they've had much impact on things.
Yeah, it still felt like a European company. You know, when we went to the event, I didn't see, you know, there was no Chinese people there. You know, there was no one talking about, you know, people were still talking about some of the values of, you know, European values, GDPR, blah, blah, blah. European resilience, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah. So it actually has a 2-3% market share, which doesn't sound like much, but when you consider the web users are 5 billion, that's actually still a few hundred million. They are publicly listed. They report nearly half a billion in revenue each year, or the past year, mostly on kind of affiliate, ad revenue, search referrals, that kind of thing. Pretty normal for most browser companies. They are announcing now. There's quite a few things we can't necessarily talk about yet, which is slightly annoying. But they are announcing.
It was kind of a power-packed event with a lot of embargoes, which means news that you can't release to a certain date.
They are announcing another paid product at some point this year, and I don't actually see it listed. Ah, no, it is listed. So don't know when, but there will be some more paid for products coming up. So. Opera is based on Chromium. It used to have its own rendering engine, but that's not the case anymore. So in many of these cases, the browser maker has to sort of find a way to differentiate. They claim to be the largest independent browser outside of Apple Safari and Google Chrome, i.e. the operating system vendor. Although with Chrome, that's a little woolly because not every Chrome user is using Android. But the web has very much become Google Chrome, which upsets me. So I'm all for a lot of these smaller companies, actually. And they have a couple of different products, which we'll dig into. But they were largely also announcing a couple of feature sets, which they are calling Web 4.0. And the O is an O, not a zero. Mimicking the kind of OpenAI model naming, because guess what? What do you think the features they were mostly announcing, Kate? Surely not.
AI?
No, no company announces AI features these days. Yes. So do you want to give a quick recap of some of the demos we saw?
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually kind of fun watching demos. They had a big screen, there's a little stage, there's a bit of, there's a lot of drama. And one thing that got my most attention, perhaps the most attention for me, was the browser operator. Mm-hmm. So, there's no shortage of hype in agentic AI, but this was basically watching a browser operator, I'm just going to call it an operator, perform searches and tasks on behalf of the web. Behalf of the user, rather. Mm-hmm. So basically, it was more than just using AI for web searching. You could basically ask it to do something for you, a task on the internet. Yep. So basically, when you're talking about this kind of browser operator, they're powered by AI, and it can interact directly with web page elements and take control of the browsing experience.
Yeah.
And there are a couple of examples, which Henrik Lexell, the director of product marketing technology, that's a mouthful, showed. One was helping plan a cycling trip in Tuscany, and how to pack a bike for the trip as part of that. So basically, he tapped on a few tabs on his laptop, and then said to the browser, "I'm stuck. I need help to plan a trip, bike trip around Europe." And basically, the operator asked him where he wanted to go and when, what he wanted to do, and then it searched the web. It opened a booking, I think it was booking.com site for accommodation, chose the dates, but also opened up YouTube to show some videos about how you could take a bike across Europe on planes. So that was kind of cool. But then it got more interesting, and this was kind of the highlight, I guess, for me for the event. They basically used the browser to order a bunch of yellow flowers from a local shop to go to the hotel room of one of the journalists. So basically, the operator searched, it opened the website, the flower shop, found yellow flowers, filled in all the info that you fill in to make a payment and, address and stuff. And, but the reality of it, this is kind of the reality of what you see with these kind of demos, doing that in front of a room full of, us cynical, gnarly journalists and also some content creator influencers. It's not very easy. And the browser operator actually stopped before the last click on the checkout. Mm-hmm. So he had to do that manually. He had to click to finalize it. And I believe the problem was, from memory, Chris, it was because one of the drop-downs on the website was in Portuguese and everything else was in English. Was that correct?
Yeah, that's the impression I got. Multilingual models are still a little odd sometimes.
Yeah, but it did the heavy lifting. And so it was kind of this running joke, is these flowers going to turn up? They've just done this thing, is it, And basically the journalist came to dinner the next night and he had three bunches of flowers.
Yeah.
Because when the guy was nervously trying to get it to work, he clicked pay three times, order three times.
I think it was the 3D authentication that actually broke it a bit. So not specifically. Yeah.
So it's not the language, or is it both?
No, I think the AI failed on the language a little, but I think the process failed because the approval got triggered multiple times.
Mm.
I think. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, it was a good kind of visual, because you had this active sort of event that occurred. And for the company, they say it was the first time that Opera's browser operator ordered something for the general public in a live way, and arguably the first time that flowers have been ordered with agentic-based AI.
Okay.
So it was a cool product, and I think it's it's the kind of thing that it would be a lot of fun to play around with once it gets released to everybody, to all the users of Opera.
Yeah. One very quick second, sorry. Okay. But there's some other things as well. So they actually have three or four, five, depending how you factor things, different browsers. Mm. So there's Opera One, which is kind of main Opera, I suppose.
Yeah.
And most of its new features were for the AI operator, also split screen, split window, I suppose. Some various things around tabs. like Tab Islands, some other things around Tabs coming later. Aria, which is the AI, command line. Some of these have found themselves in a lot of browsers these days. But then they also have a couple of different products. GX, which is for gamers, which is wonderfully customizable and wonderfully kind of over the top in some respects in true gamer style of customizations and performance tweaks and all sorts of things, mods and stuff like that. But yeah, it's sort of a niche use case, maybe.
Yeah.
But they still have 34 million monthly users, which again, there's nothing to be
said. Exactly.
At. And again, they're offering some more features to that shortly. Yeah. Sorry, Kate, can you just give me 1 minute?
Yep. I assume my microphone's working okay.
It's fine, yeah. There was also, which they announced at the event, Opera Air, which...
This was very interesting.
Yeah, this is aimed at kind of mindfulness, calm. I think one of the things they seem to often be doing, and I guess revisiting that aspect of being the largest independent browser outside of the operating system, they have a lot of features that are often available in the operating system. Mm. So across all browsers, things like messaging integration, music players, which you could do elsewhere, but you can do directly in the browser, like Spotify and Apple Music and Messenger and stuff like that. But with Air, they also add a health reminders, like stand up, eye rest, take a breath, et cetera, et cetera.
And also breathing exercises.
Yeah. And also binaural sounds, things which are supposed to be good for focus, all built in the browser. Nice UI. I actually quite like the UI.
I liked it too. Yeah. And they have some more things coming that we couldn't mention here because they're under embargo.
Yeah.
But I think it shows an interesting kind of way. Like, I like the fact that they're kind of doing these creative things across different, I don't know, segments, audience segments perhaps.
It's an interesting decision because in other companies, like I mentioned JetBrains to them a few times, who have different IDEs for different programming languages, but effectively you also have IntelliJ where you can kind of just expand it with plugins and wondered why they didn't do something similar, just like having Opera that you could Airify or GXify or something like that. But this is their strategy. So.
Yeah, it's a good point. I actually wondered about how you market it. You market the different browsers. I mean, maybe if you're already using it, you don't care. You've already tapped in. But for a new audience, I mean, are you doing 3 marketing campaigns? Like, you know?
I don't know. I think so. I mean, they are different crowds. Gamer and meditating people are not necessarily the same.
True that.
The other one was Opera Developer, which actually excited me the most. I mean, the developer release is often the one that... where you get kind of cutting edge features. And one thing they have in it, which I'm very interested about, and I'm actually working a little bit more on in a video, is local models. So Aria is running on models in the cloud, but you can also, in theory, connect to models running locally. Not all, just some, but it is possible. And I'm experimenting with that a little bit and actually speaking to someone from the team next week about that in more detail. But that's quite interesting because a lot of local model usage these days is generally the text or developer focused. So having something that you could in theory do something more in a user-friendly context is kind of interesting. That's something that interested me quite a lot. And finally, we should talk about the mobile ones because iOS and Android, they mostly are feature parity with many of the desktop features. But also they talked about Opera Mini, which is a version of the Android browser used in developing worlds on low resource devices and also on feature phones as well. And the thing that interested me the most, which is what I'm mostly speaking to the team about next week, is that the operator runs on that as well. So having AI running on low-end devices is kind of interesting. And that alone, actually Opera Mini is their most popular browser. It alone has 70 monthly active users in Africa alone.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's nothing. Yeah, that's, I think it's something that often gets overlooked.
Yeah. But,
and, you know, I know I've certainly been talking to more startups about this issue of, you know, where they have low connectivity and so forth. Or they just can't afford, you know, like places like the Philippines where they do have Starlink, but people have to pay for it individually and they can't afford it.
Yeah. You know? So, I mean, what did you think? I mean, I used to use Opera in the past. Actually, I have this list of firsts that Opera had. First to introduce tabs, first to introduce inbuilt search, mobile, sync, ad blocker, VPN, a whole bunch of other things. But one of the things they don't have on this list, which is one of the reasons I used it many years ago, well, not many years ago, but a while ago, was it actually one of the first browsers with a crypto wallet as well.
Oh, really?
So that's if you were into crypto, then it was an early opportunity to get a wallet before other browsers like Brave and et cetera did. So it's funny they don't mention it, but it's still there in the features. I did see it. Or maybe it wasn't the first. I don't know. But it was the first kind of quote-unquote mainstream. I've been experimenting a little bit with it. When I'm using a Chromium browser, I'm generally using Brave. I've been attempting to move it out and try Opera some more. It's an interesting challenge sometimes. You suddenly realize you have to re-log into everything, even a browser you only use some of the time. So, but what are your general feelings? Would you use it more based on your experiences?
I think I would have to finish customizing it to me.
Yeah.
I downloaded it during the event, or just before the event rather. And, you know, just adding things and making it things that the way I work, you know, because I do things a little bit differently. You know, I use my translator. I have to have a bigger font, just things like that, that take a little bit longer. You know, adding the way I organize my tabs and, you know, one password, those kind of integrations, I guess, was a little bit of a faff. But I mean, that said, it would be the same probably to install anything these days from scratch.
Although this is one thing I did notice, because if you like, all of these are basically anything based on Chromium is using the Google Chrome Store for extensions. Yeah. But if you go with Brave, it has like a weird reskinned version of it, whereas Opera didn't always. There was quite a few plugins I tried to find that it kind of looked like it wasn't available, but it is. You know, it is.
Maybe that makes sense actually, because I did have that, a little bit of that. I use Brave myself most of the time, except when it's some things don't let you pay, for example, on it, so you have to go somewhere else, stuff like that. But yeah, but you know, I think it's I think they're playing around with it. I think that the fact that they're offering these additional incentives and value adds make it very interesting.
So that was Opera Days, Opera in Italy, very appropriate. Next time we'll have to do, I don't know, something else. Okay, so Kate, how can people find you and your work, and where are you off to in the near future?
Yeah, I am probably most active on LinkedIn under my name, Kate Lawrence, Kate with a C, Lawrence with a W, or I'm on Blue Sky. Yeah, exactly. I'm on Blue Sky. I probably don't use it that much just because it's, you know, I think the same reason a lot of us don't use it that much. It's not as active perhaps as we thought. Next week I am in Porto at SIM25, which is a conference, a startup conference by I guess organized by Startup Portugal.
Okay.
You know, the usual kind of thing, I guess, startups, investors, ecosystem. But I think it will be good. I'm looking forward to it. And what about you, Chris? How can people find you?
You can find more about me at christianscheller.com. I've been doing a lot of blogging for various people, put out a few videos as well. You can find links to all of those on the site, for aggregated to YouTube, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not going anywhere a massive amount in the next few weeks. I'll probably be at London Tech Week with you beginning of June. But that aside, I'm staying put in Berlin for a little while. Anyone who's more into music tech, I'll be at Superbooth next week in Berlin. That's a bit niche.
Very nice. But, will you be doing any interviews there or anything? Or
I
is it
think
not
so.
That
I mostly go there for
event.
Fun. I did a roundup last year, but it wasn't massively popular. So I'm not.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Too niche.
I'm not sure. I have mixed success with music videos. I've had a couple that are very popular and then others that aren't. So I kind of just do it when I feel like it. So
nothing wrong with a passion project.
No. Awesome. Okay, Kate, thank you very much for joining me. Enjoy the sun before it descends to gloom for a week again.
Absolutely. Enjoy the rest of your day or your evening or your morning, everybody. And we'll see you soon.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianschiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.